What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Amber Rogers is a business professional and creative from Texas. As early as she can remember, her life was filled with chaos. By the time she was 14, she was a multi-crime survivor. And by 19, she would serve as a witness in her best friend's murder trial. After the criminal justice process ended, Amber moved forward by cultivating a successful career and loving family, until her past trauma instigated a cascading effect in her mental health and relationships. Although Amber has shared portions of her story at large, it took her decades and a life-altering mental health journey to realize the deep impact her teen years had had on her. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply appreciative of Amber's transparency, rawness, and advocacy in the following two episodes. These episodes are dedicated in loving memory of Katrina Marie LoCascio.
Hi, I'm Amber Rogers. I was born in Irving, Texas. My first memory as a child was literally laying over my younger brother in his crib, and the cops were at the house. My dad was trying to break in. There had been some kind of fight. I was scared, and the officers removed us and took us to our grandparents' house. This was a pattern that was repeated often in the house. When they were in love, they were in love. And so the constant shift between the love and the hate was very, very confusing as a child. But my father had the ability to make a lot of money quickly, and he was doing very, very well in the pool business. Still one of the most talented pool builders I've ever seen. Then we moved to Parker, Texas. My mom was pregnant again at the time, so that's baby number three. He was 7 years younger, and he ended up being like my little Cabbage Patch doll. So we really bonded, but I felt so responsible for the kids. And then when I turned 10, she got pregnant again. And so at 11 on my birthday, which is March 8th, International Women's Day, I got my younger sister. I was listening to a story about Britney Spears and Jamie Lynn. And interestingly enough, Britney grew up in a home a lot like mine, and she has a younger sister. I relate to her trauma. I think it's so very tragic. I feel like the state of California basically gave her abusers the control of her. And a similar situation happened to me in the state of Texas. So I really have a heart for what she's going through. Not only was I parentified, I was also weaponized, because if they were fighting, mom would be like, oh, we're leaving, we're not coming back here. And then they would make up and it's like, why didn't you do your chores? Why are you being mean to your mom? You're supposed to just forget it. But when it was good between them, it was great. We had the best pools, we had go-karts, we had clubhouses at one point. Of course, always being in the pool, always in the water. Parker, Texas. It's certainly not a place that you would think that the things that were occurring in my home were occurring. And I think that that conditioned me at a very young age to mask my pain. Still to this day, I don't like crying in front of people. I'll put sunglasses on. I know that's probably not healthy, but that's what I did. Just because something looks good on the outside doesn't mean that all the contents are the way that people expect. So you can look perfect on the outside and people can think you have the perfect life, but they don't know the trauma and the mental pain that you might be going through. One person that I've always identified with, and strangely enough, when I was young, got called Marilyn a lot. And she was deemed one of the most beautiful women in the world. Yet she had such a traumatic childhood. I'd lay in bed and fantasize. And I think this also led to some mental health issues. I was so good at escapism, listening to music or pretending I was adopted. There were times I would just wish they'd never had me and that I wasn't in that situation. So at a really young age, I sought refuge outside the home. I was very social and always popular. And I had amazing friends throughout my life. That's something that's really saved me. Katrina came in my life when I was 14. I was very, very unhappy because we had to transition from Parker, Texas to Flower Mound. My dad did file for bankruptcy. So that's when we transitioned into a much smaller house. I didn't already fit in. I didn't like leaving my friends because my friends were my foundation. Katrina was older than me. She was 17 and I was 14. She became like the sister I never had. And I bonded with her in so many ways. She was an only child, so she really took to me. She loved everybody. She liked to have fun. They partied. They did things that I wasn't really privy to. I will say that they never let me around that. They always protected me because I was younger. I never knew what was going on. She had this black Grand Am that she loved, and it was always sparkling beautiful. And so I'm in middle school and I've got this 17-year-old picking me up. Honestly, she knew what was going on in my house. I think she really wanted to protect me. Her friend lived kind of catty corner to us, and then Robert Girdley lived next door to her. And my mom says, oh, look at that boy. He's cute. Robert was 2 years older than me. I'd never kissed. I was called prude. I was teased because I was popular and the boys would want to date me, but I wouldn't even hold their hands. So the very first time he took my hand and then he kissed me and he talked me into going into the house. And that's where the first rape occurred. Predators don't prey on healthy homes. And so that constant back and forth and the unhealthy dynamic in the home, it's not a coincidence. By the time I was 14, I had been raped. It happened twice, but what was weird is somehow I just fell madly in love with him. I thought he really loved me because he told me that and he groomed me. I was very much obsessively in love with him. And he was horrible to me in so many ways. And I stayed with him. Because he was like, oh, you were just so beautiful. And I just couldn't help myself. He was the most charming person I probably ever met in my life. What's so interesting is that I did tell people, I just didn't tell my parents. I told Katrina and I told one other person. I will never, ever forget it. She said, if you don't tell somebody, he's gonna kill somebody.
What was Katrina's point of view of the situation?
I honestly think he conned her. He was so manipulative. I think that she kind of thought that we were messing around and it went too far.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
You're in a toxic relationship with him for about a year, is that correct?
Yeah, so from 14 to 15. Amidst all of that, my parents had got me a teen line, which I was super excited about because I wanted to be on the phone with Katrina all the time. When she wasn't with me, I was talking to her or making plans to sneak out somewhere, which I was pretty good at. March 30th, 92, she went missing. End of my freshman year. When I saw them leave together, I didn't really even think about it. Because I was younger, I had a curfew. I couldn't go. And they just left from a friend's house. So I saw them drive down the street together and they just waved goodbye and went in like any normal day. When my mom had come up to get me that Katrina had not gone home, I knew something was wrong. Because if she wasn't at home, she would have been at her friend Leah's house. But she wasn't there. She wasn't with me. Those were the only places she would be. She had no reason not to go home. She had very loving parents.
After she went missing, did you just know in your gut it was him?
I knew, but I didn't want to know.
I imagine her parents reported her missing immediately. Did the police come visit you at a certain point? How quickly did that happen? And what did you share with them?
I just told them the truth. I told them I saw him leaving a certain time, and I honestly didn't know anything. Eventually, they found the car, and the car seat was pulled back. Katrina was very short like me, and Robert was 6'1". She never let anybody else drive that car. So we knew somebody adjusted the seat. You just knew it wasn't her. They should have really pounded in on that. I just feel like had there been a private investigator involved, that we wouldn't have gone through the 2 years of the turmoil that we went through, because having somebody missing is terrible. It's complete torture. It never leaves your mind. You have days where you're like, maybe they'll just find her. And then you feel guilty because hopefully she's alive. Is she being tortured? Literal hell. The worst part really was the helicopters over your head and the media in your face, and you know they're looking for a body. They brought in a female investigator because they knew I was lying about something. They just didn't know it was the rape. They thought that maybe I knew something and I didn't. They tried to pull things out of me that just weren't there. And it did take a while before I told everything. I didn't tell everything with the investigators. That's when the FBI came in. The FBI knew I was hiding something because I hadn't told any adult I was raped. And they did not play with me with kid gloves. They even looked at my dad as a suspect. It was very intense. They were like, you are going to tell us. And I said, well, if my dad finds out, he's going to hurt him. Finally, the FBI scared me enough that I confessed that he had raped me. So much was happening in the investigation. There were things they couldn't tell you. Then there were things you would get pieces of. One thing that I highly encourage family members to do, if anybody ever comes up missing, hire a private detective from day one, because there's so much they can't tell you. And apparently they had him on some other charges, so they were able to get him arrested before they told my parents.
May 10th, 1992, he was arrested for fraud and illegal use of credit cards, burglary of vehicle. And then September 27th, 1992, the same year, he was then arrested again for forgery and forging a credit card and credit card abuse, it looks like. September 15th, 1993, he was charged for felony third-degree aggravated assault.
Yeah, and I believe they were holding my rape back in case the murder charge didn't stick. Not a lot after we moved to Trophy Club, Texas. To be honest, that really saved my life getting out of there. And Trophy Club was a very affluent community, nice families. The hard part for me in that situation was that I was so different. I had been through so much. I tried to be like everybody else, I guess. I had a lot of friends there, but the abuse in the house was so bad, and it definitely was not something you saw in Trophy Club. I ended up living with a friend. I moved out about the age of 15. You don't really slow down. First of all, you can't grieve until they find her. Then you got to go through the grieving process again. They were about to prosecute without a body. They were going to move forward.
But at what point do you think they knew it was him?
I don't know. We didn't have a lot of communication until the body was found. They found her when I was 17 by a creek. She was shot twice. From what I remember, I think it was once in the foot, once in the head. They couldn't tell if she had been raped. That was always a question. When you have somebody you love has been murdered, you just wonder, what'd she feel? Was she tortured? How scared was she? Those horrible thoughts that you think. And then the worst thought is, I just hope it was quick. It's a horrible thing to think about your friend.
But he was actually not charged for murder until August 31st, 1995.
Yeah, it took a while. That's another problem with the justice system. Why wait years before these people can have some type of peace?
Also, that history I just read, if we consider that, he had murdered someone in 1992, and then he had committed forgery, credit card abuse, robbery, aggravated assault. In all of those years, he could have potentially very easily murdered somebody else, especially if he's getting away, quote unquote, with all of those things and the previous murder, he's going to feel empowered.
I just wasn't around. I didn't know any of that. This was in Flower Mound, Texas. Real small town. And I always tell people this, it's safe until it's not. It can happen anywhere. I don't know that they investigated it right. And here's the other thing that I've always wrestled with. Robert was severely abused himself, and his mom supposedly committed suicide. The other thing that's really bothersome, I don't know that he acted alone. The funeral was super hard. The funeral is an absolute fog to me. I know the police were there because they had told us they were going to be there. And I know the cameras were there because they were taking pictures of me. I'm front page of the newspaper bawling. My friend Katie's just hugging me. Everybody in my other school found out, and everybody found out about the rape. lot of people questioned the rape at the other school because I stayed with him, and it was just a lot.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
If you like your true crime, like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
What happens next in terms of the criminal justice process?
The trial was 97. You wait 2 years for a trial, and so I was literally completely disrupted from 15 to 19. I don't know why it took 2 years, because we were going to go to trial without a body. We were obviously thankful we had her back, but they were prepared to press forward.
What did that require of 19-year-old Amber to be a part of that criminal justice process? And what was that like for you?
I remember being on the witness stand. It was infuriating because the rape wasn't able to be entered into any of the testimony. I couldn't even breathe the word rape. I did get a little sneaky and insinuated he had done things to me. I got it across to the jurors, and I knew I did without saying it. The defense really tried to make me look like a druggy whore, and that I stayed with him, so I allowed this. Anything they could do to re-victimize me. I wasn't even allowed to say I was raped, for crying out loud, but they were basically going through any boyfriend I had had or trying to find any drug deal, which didn't exist. Anything in any way they could portray me that I wasn't right or that I was lying, they did. It's really sad that you can do that to victims. And it's really sad that if you have been raped, you can't bring that into a capital murder trial. I think the results would have been different. I remember being sequestered. I didn't know what any of the other testimony was. I don't remember how long the juror was out. Waiting for the verdict is just, oh God. I don't even remember how long we waited, but it felt like forever. And you're just like, oh my God, are they going to get it right? Because this was a very circumstantial case and they didn't have DNA. And I didn't know what the other testimony was. I remember when they came back with life, and you feel no relief. I think it would have been better if they just would have given him death. And I did have the option to go back in on a rape trial, but he got life in prison, so I did not want to go through another trial.
According to a Jonesboro Sun article, after a 2.5-week trial, Robert Gurdley III was sentenced to life in prison on November 21, 1997. In Texas, parole eligibility for a life sentence depends on several things, including the specific offense, the date of the conviction, and whether the sentence offers the possibility of parole. In many cases, a person serving a life sentence must actually only serve a minimum number of years, which is often only 30 or 40 years. before the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles can review the case and decide whether release is appropriate, based on factors such as behavior, rehabilitation, and public safety. Amber didn't know this at the time.
One thing that the DA did say to me was, he said, "You got him. You're the reason that this happened." And even then, weirdly enough, I felt a little guilt, because again, I thought I loved him, because you're talking about a 14-year-old that wrote him love notes and snuck out to see him. I don't feel like I ever got the full truth, but you don't get the truth from psychopaths. So to really take a look at it now, by the age of 19, had been raped at 14. A year later, he murders my best friend. Then she's missing for 2 years. 2 years later, I go through a trial in which I can't even talk about the rape.
Also, you are a co-victim of murder. This is your best friend that was murdered.
You know what is so interesting? Because I haven't talked about this a lot, you are the first person that ever used that term with me. I didn't even realize I was a co-victim. I say, when you have a loved one murdered, you will never be the same, ever. It's not possible. It's the most inhumane way and natural way somebody should go. You question your mind. Again, were they tortured? How much did they feel? Why did this happen? And you're trying to get answers from psychopaths. This is where I have a huge problem. My situation, the FBI has been involved in since I was 15 years old. In my opinion, and I hope to eventually get a law changed, if there is a witness to a capital murder trial, they should have ongoing free mental health care through the state. It needs to be available. After the trial was over, I just kind of shut that chapter out of my life. And I thought I was okay, but I wasn't. I was so traumatized. I was so happy to have it behind me. And I wanted to erase it, but I did not get the proper therapy. And shame on the state of Texas. I didn't even realize myself how much it still affected me.
Did you ever go to therapy as a young adult?
They forced me into a little therapy when the FBI came in, I think like 2 times. I don't really remember it very much. Obviously, it didn't have much of an impact on me. They probably should have therapied me a little more at that point. A real failure is the parent not getting the counseling. But if a parent's not in place and available to do that, the state needs to make sure it's done, period. I wasn't like anybody my age. I didn't relate to the college kids. I partied, I drank, but I didn't do drugs because that had been tied to the situation, they thought. So I was always scared to be around it. I wasn't healed, but I was mature. I'd gone through adult situations and I had handled them. I said to myself, I can forgive him for what he did to me, but it wasn't my place to forgive him what he did to my friend. I'm not going to let what he did make me a bitter person, but I didn't have healthy boundaries.
Not long after the trial was over, Amber met her ex-husband when she was still 19 and he was 30. She began forging a life for herself as well as a family. Even the conditions in her origin family were becoming more positive. Things were looking up. Then her past unhealed trauma caught up with her.
I met him through my best friend. We had a great life for a long time. We really did. Just like I never really talked about this, I never really told him a lot of things.
What do you think you were seeking out of that relationship? And what do you think he was seeking?
I was completely seeking safety. I had never been safe my whole life. My dad stopped drinking. They stopped fighting after I moved out. So they changed. And I just wanted a happy, peaceful family. I really did. I just wanted normal. My husband was seeking a trophy wife. What he got was somebody who was really smart, who made more money, that I think intimidated him. I think that that caused some issues. My dad was in real estate. So pretty young age, I wanted to do real estate. And I did do that as a career. I didn't finish school because I actually got a job offering me too much money. And my ex-husband used to comment that we had the perfect family. We were happy. We had two great kids. When I got pregnant with my first son, I was so much older than my youngest sibling, which was 11 years younger. My kids were the only grandkids in the family for 10 years. And boy, were they spoiled. There was a lot of bliss. Our divorce really shook that up.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was going to be in the media a lot. I knew I needed to protect the kids. The kids didn't ask for their mom to be some divorce advocate in USA Today. So I had a lot of pressure and there were a lot of thoughts and they were very mixed and they were coming very fast. And I had a legit breakdown in which I needed trauma counseling. I did not need to be thrown into a cop car and taken to a state institution.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
If you like your true crime, like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.